Welcome to the European Hockey Federation podcast, in conversation with the biggest name in hockey, generating insight and engagement around coaching, officiating and playing, powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFIH Academy, presented by Jack Rolfe, the founder of the Coaching Lab. Today we spoke with two hockey magicians, Tomislav Jamičić and Liza Jakob, about technical development for coaches and players. Listen more about it on this episode. Over to Jack.
Guys, good morning. Thanks a lot for joining us for what is the final in the series, in the second series of the EHF webinar. Again, as ever, fantastic to have you with us and brilliant to have, again, two fantastic guests that are going to share their knowledge, insight from the world of hockey and their travels as well. I'm Jack Rolfe, founder of the Coaching Lab and kind of presenter for the series. As ever, we'll be able to catch up on the website on Coach Logic. If you miss the episode or have to leave early, you can see what's going on. But Tomislav, Liza, welcome. Liza, ladies first, maybe you could give us a bit of a lowdown of how you're here, how did you end up on the webinar series, and why would we have you here potentially?
Geez, start with the easy ones, Jack. I am a former international, so played for Ireland for almost 10 years. I'm retired now maybe since 2014, so quite a while. And while I was playing, I was just coaching in schools and stuff. It's very hard to coach clubs when you're involved in the national setup, but when I finished, there's no real conscious choice. I just enjoyed it. So got involved in coaching clubs and junior age group teams here in Ireland. So I think potentially that's why I'm here.
Awesome. And you missed a bit out about the rugby, because that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. So when I finished playing hockey, I moved to playing rugby sevens for about a year and a half, and then did a bit of mad cycling. And it's informed my coaching a little bit. When I finished psychology in college, I did a diploma in executive coaching, so sort of a mix of like business and life coaching. So it probably all kind of has come together to kind of around that coaching piece. So yep.
Awesome, great to have you with us, Liza. Tomislav, over to you.
So Jack, I am a former Croatian international. I grew up in Croatia and started playing hockey there. But I also got involved in coaching very early, and coaching the youngsters and later seniors. Also, I coached even the national team of Croatia. But also, following my dream, I ended up in the Netherlands. The passion for hockey brought me here, and I've been living here for 15 years. And I have done a lot of coaching courses, and I also got involved with the European Hockey Federation. I was involved in different projects as a participant at the different FIH coaching courses. And then later I became a mentor for European Hockey Federation. I became also a mentor for Dutch Hockey Federation. And the past 5 years I've been working on Coaches for Europe, the coaching education program of European Hockey Federation. And I am, since last year, the lead mentor for Coaches for Europe. And with a group of mentors, I'm conducting this course. And this year it was online. We had webinars online in June. And hopefully next year we'll continue it. And I'm also doing some other projects for European Hockey Federation in developing nations, supporting the coaching development there. And the Hockey Magic Caravan we do every year, traveling with the bus and sharing the clinics in different countries.
Tomislav, I'm sure we'll talk about the caravan and the magic dust that it spreads later on as we go through. But both former internationals, both at the top level of your countries and of the game, and now coaching the kids and the youth and the seniors. But what's some of the biggest influences on your coaching now and your coaching philosophy that you look to deliver back to your coach, to your players? Maybe Liza, you can start with this one.
Yeah, I think I've probably, between sports but mostly in hockey, I've had like over 100 coaches, I think, probably over 15 or 20 years. So I think the first place I would definitely start is I've had a huge influence on me as a coach from the coaches that I've had. And in particular, I can think of a couple. So one of them, Richard Willis, was a coach in school. And he very much coached me, I would say, like a guy. I don't mean that in a bad way, but if I ever joined in the sessions with the guys, he didn't treat me any differently. He pushed me as hard and very much had this like really high standards. So it would take a lot for you to get sort of a compliment or a well done. And even if you executed something well, you know, he was always looking for, you're trying to do that 8 or 9 times out of 10. So probably gave me a sort of a, he kind of trained me how to train, I think, really well. And that probably underpinned how I trained as a player. But really that has come into my coaching quite a lot as well, in terms of how I would like to push players and support them to train. And then probably another one for a long part of my international career, Gene Muller, he's South African, but has coached in Canada as well. He coached for a long time, and probably some of his coaching interventions with me, I would say, taught me a lot. And as a coach, I suppose, I probably realised that from that it's really that kind of balance between what you bring as a coach to support a player's performance, but also actually a huge amount of it is down to the player. So just trying to find that balance as a coach between sort of lighting the fire and making the player really figure out, what is it I need to do to get selected or to, you know, start or whatever it is. So yeah, they'd probably be the two biggest things. I think I played in Holland for a season as well, so that probably gave me a whole other dimension in terms of looking at hockey. And I suppose the club I was at, and even in the country, I think, very attacking, aggressive, kind of go for it, a lot based around kind of skill and technique. And that probably, it's just kind of broadened my mind and has made me think a little bit differently, maybe from a coaching point of view. So, but I'd say probably the main source actually are all the coaches I've had, shaping, oh, I wouldn't do it like that, or I think that was really valuable. So taking bits from there.
That's awesome. We spoke to Alison Anand earlier on in the series, and she shared a similar insight of reflected back on all her past coaches almost and said, you know, I like this bit, I don't like this bit, and this is what I bring to my own philosophy. So yeah, that's awesome. And lightning the fire is a great phrase. I'm going to steal that one. Thomas Lav.
Yeah, good one. Lightning the fire. I like it. Well, for me, I must say I had, at the age of 14, I had this Croatian coach, nobody has ever heard of him, and he passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago, and he was quite old when he was coaching me, but he really gave me, this fire in the sense of ball technical skills. From him, I really learned how I can, develop my technical skills. And because he was a Croatian coach, and he had some really good ideas. And he just by looking at the game, and I know we didn't have a good team. We were not at the top level of the Croatian league, but we had a good trainings. He was really passionate about the trainings, and he gave me this skill, and I became a very much better player. And then later on, I moved to other club and became national team player, and then playing in the Netherlands. But it's also the most thanks to him. And his name is Zvonimir Petrovic, and his nickname was Kiro, and everybody knows him in Croatia from the nickname. But it was really strange how, and when I came then later to the Netherlands, and then I see that his ideas were, even here are more improved or more on the higher level and the way of thinking about the game. And so maybe actually thanks to him, I'm here where I am now.
And Tomislav, what's an example of one of those ideas that you say where you thought was a bit crazy, but actually kind of isn't?
He had exercises about the left hand. How to improve the technical skills with the left hand? So you would execute skills, dribbling skills, only with the left hand, using the left hand. And it improved so much. I'm right-handed, and left hand is crucial for a hockey player. I have never met someone who had these ideas about this left hand as he did. But I really experienced that it improved not only my technical skills, but also from other players. Yeah, it was really, really nice. And he also had some about the target man position, if you know, on the baseline in the tactical view, how you can use, because he used to play only with the offside in his time. But he had this idea how you can use the depth in the game. And it's from a Croatian country, from a Croatian origin. So yeah, they didn't have top level, they didn't have World Cups and things like that, and they didn't have the coaching courses like in the Netherlands or Germany or something. But he came up himself with these ideas.
And you both, both come from smaller hockey countries. You know, not hockey hubs of India or Australia or Holland. And you've both gone to the hockey capitals to coach and to play. What have you taken maybe from those countries back, and what have you taken from those smaller countries over to those, you know, hockey hotbeds?
I would like to think that when I went, I took what's probably really identifiable with Irishness, which is kind of like real enthusiasm and sort of willingness to just get stuck in. And I mean that in the hockey sense, but also sort of culturally as well, to just give it a go. I've definitely taken probably sort of wider than just the actual technical or tactical stuff. I obviously took a lot from that, but I suppose around the hockey games, having the little mini mascots coming out for the games and what happens at halftime and sort of the party atmosphere. Like in Ireland, we probably are trying to, the top division, we've been trying to build a bit of fun and festivity around it for the last couple of years. So it's just taking things that I've seen in Holland and suggesting in our club, you know, maybe we can do this with the little minis at halftime or before the game that they come into the team talk or whatever. So I know it sounds like strange, it's maybe not on the pitch, but I think it's relevant wherever you are.
No, we did that the other day actually in Australia here. We I think it was the 5-6 girls. They came and did the pre-match warm-up and did the pre-match meeting and met the girls. And, you know, the small thing, which hopefully means those players transition on to senior hockey. You know, it costs no money at all, but you know, it's a small detail which could be huge.
Definitely.
Thomas Love.
I was flabbergasted by the immense hockey culture here in the Netherlands. For someone from Croatia, it's really huge. Even the small clubs here, they have 3 pitches or something like that. you know, so it's a totally different world. What I mostly took, probably the tactical stuff. We learned a lot. We learned from the good coaches and mentors I had here in the Netherlands about tactical stuff. But also about how the structure works and the volunteers around the club. How many people are needed, volunteers to run the clubs in all these different committees. Like Lisa said, to arrange these things for the youth, for sponsoring, for the bar, for parties. Because all these things generate this culture they create, and why they feel safe and invited to a hockey club. And so it feels like a family to go to the hockey club, and these parents who get involved and then become a coach of the under 8 or under 10 team, and then later they become an umpire maybe, and they join a committee. And that's really a nice example of how hockey culture here works.
Let's zoom in on the Dutch hockey coaching kind of environment and culture and details. Tomislav, maybe first, you worked within the Dutch system, both obviously at club, but also within the youth of the regional kind of area. Could you give us a bit of a lowdown? I know you've shared some stuff with me previously, but a bit of a lowdown about maybe what they're looking for, looking to develop as priority areas.
In the development. Now, we are, of course, for the skills, you need to have some good basic skills. And then it is speed. The quicker the players, that's what they are looking for in the youth selections, the better, with the ball and without the ball, the quickness without the ball. And they are also looking for some unique selling points. So not just to work on the things that you are not good in, but also just to improve and get excellent in some. For example, one-on-one defending is one of those things. They say we are in the Netherlands only attacking orientated, but we also look for the good defenders. And we understand if we select a team with 11 attackers, only minded up front, it won't work. So you need this mix. And that's why we are looking for this unique selling points. You have players with a good technical feeling and, for example, high ball, they can play, they can see the 3D behind the defense, those kind of players and you're also looking for this, and that was also my thing when I was coaching this team, looking for this natural talent who can do the things with ease, you know, you can easily performing the skills without any seemingly without any effort or doing
when you say basics, what are the basics? You know, hockey is such a dynamic, quick game, but what are the core skills that, you know, are priorities?
You think about receiving skills and passing skills on the move. So both the receiving is dynamic and passing skills on the move. Like I know in the under 12, under 14, you want to have them push the ball on the run with the right foot forward and not stopping and putting the left foot forward. So those skills. And then the lift passes, receiving the lift passes, playing the lift passes on the run, hitting the ball on the run, the forehand and the backhand. Those would be the basics.
And Lisa, what did you kind of take from your experiences in Holland when you was playing, and did you get involved in some coaching as well?
Yeah, I did a small bit of coaching, and it was actually quite interesting coaching with somebody from Holland. So we had not really different ideas, but I suppose I could see what was quite visible was there was a lot of technical work, things around elimination. Absolutely tell me everything that you said there. And I think what I also noticed is that they had a real focus on in the circle, like ruthlessness, like getting prepared so you can hit a long-handled hit as soon as you cross the line in a circle. But I suppose what I had never seen before was across the board that the focus in the circle to score a goal, you know, so often you would see goals scored even by the youth, like sideboard, backboard, you know, and that was definitely something where I kind of was like, well, you can see why this nation is so good, you know. I think they were the main things, but I think just seeing the focus on elimination that wouldn't have been so strong in Ireland. The Irish game was maybe a bit more around structure, physically being quite strong and running a lot, and maybe a bit more counter-attack rather than building up and playing, you know, 1v1, we're going to eliminate you. So but really good, because then the game is a bit different. Instead of looking for 2v1s, you've got somebody eliminates three players, and then it's it's what's happening in the top 25. So
Tomislav, I think it was one of the questions you kept asking me when I was on the course, and a lot of the educators did, of just what are you actually training? You know, it was one of the questions that when you delivered a session or you designed a session, it was just what are you actually training? And I think that was one of the biggest things I've taken from the European guys, of just be really specific on those skills that the players have got. But Tomislav, I suppose the flip question is, when does the team tactics come in as a priority area? Because I think often we see it as a win. We need to win the game, so tactics become a priority maybe too early.
Yeah, you don't want to start that too early, like with under 12s. You should definitely focus on the developing the technical skills, and that's the one of the mistakes the coaches make, because they want to win the game and they will start how to teach the players the press, and they will have success probably if they do it well. They will have success, but if they forget developing of individual technical skills, then in the long term those players will miss that, and they will not be able to reach maybe the potential that they had. And also for your club team, but also for the national team, then you will not develop the players in that wide range. And that's one of the things. It's like with tricky with the competition, because competition is good and everybody wants to play matches, test each other. But if you put too early, too much focus on the competition and the results. Now somebody won, somebody lost. It was 5-0. It was 5-1. Then you will lose this development, which is important for the youth players. If you're talking about under 12, under 14, and then under 16, under 18, you can talk about real serious team tactics, and you have developed technical players, which still can make some progress. But not as much as when they are 12. So you should really consider your coaching sessions to be to make technical skills in a game situation. We are okay. That's also one of the parts how you can do it. But to keep developing. But you see, you have, for example, I always say this example on the coaching course about the left defender. So you put this guy on the left defender, and you still tell him, he's not so skillful. He's 11 or 12. He's not so skillful. Okay, just receive pass along the line. Receive pass along the line. So this guy has been his whole life. He's been receiving passing along the line. So, and you're coaching, and maybe it's effective for your team and your team result, but you didn't develop a good player in the end. Because how great it would be that you were playing the under 18 or a senior team, and you have a left defender with excellent elimination skills, and just go, the attacker comes with the press and he's gone, and the whole press is gone, and they, yeah, so it is about much further than looking for the result of the competition in the youth.
I spoke to an academy coach at Tottenham Hotspur recently, and he spoke about the skills, and he said, we want every single player to have the midfield attributes of a world-class midfielder. So the goalkeeper, the centre-forward, the left forward, to have the skill sets, which I thought was an interesting point, that actually now, similar to hockey, Arthur Van Doren is probably a prime example that, you know, the skill sets to play in almost every single line. Lisa, this element of youth to senior, you know, you both have gone through that youth to senior phase, but what would you say are some of the big priorities and those trends of maybe why people don't make it at the senior level, and how can coaches better support that transition between youth to senior?
Yeah, I think in terms of making it from youth to senior, I've seen so many talented players not make it. So for me, I think in terms of, elite skill set, I suppose a skill for me is something that you can work on. I actually think the biggest one is discipline. I know it's non-specific to hockey, but it's a discipline to kind of organize your life and your training and everything to make the best of yourself. And then I suppose probably kind of on from that, what happens to you under pressure? So, you know, you can technically be really good when there's nobody close to you. But then when you're under pressure, either the situation in a game or having players trying to steal the ball off you or whatever, or having to make decisions more quickly, is players who do well under pressure, I think will make the jump. But I think I think a lot of the foundations of both of those happen, you know, at whatever age you are. I think obviously when you're younger and you're starting off, it's all about enjoying it and kind of loving it and just getting on the ball or going, you know, training or practicing as much as you can. But I think, you know, that sort of a discipline piece, like I've seen a lot of people falling off around 18, 19, who definitely had the talent but didn't have the discipline. So I don't know, maybe it sounds a bit ruthless or something, but that's my reflection.
Tomislav, you're, you know, working with the best league in the world for the under 18s potentially in Holland at the top tier, but how are you supporting those girls to go and play senior hockey, whether that's in the, you know, the Damas, you know, Hoof cluster as well, but how are you working with those under 18s to do that?
It's a good question, Jack. And sometimes it's also underestimated, this this part, because like we have the Nijmegen is a big club. They have senior team playing in the second level of Dutch competition, very serious. They also played first level in the past, and it depends, because these girls who are playing in the under 18 team, they have been playing since they were six probably. Some of them come also from the cities around. It doesn't say immediately in the Netherlands, at least, that they will go to for the senior hockey. For the some of them, they go to study and then they will put hockey on a lower level. They will play in some friends team or student team. Although they are quite serious right now, for sure, motivated and serious. But then the student life takes some other priorities. Then maybe like Lisa mentioned, in spite of the talent, they have some other priorities. And but some of them will go for that. Some of them will go for the first ladies team, and we work together with the coach of the first ladies team. And then later in the season, we arrange that they can train once a week. And I know that other clubs also do that. They arrange with and the boss is also a good example. They arrange that under 18 the girls team, first team, the girls they train two times, one time a week with the senior team, just to feel it, to get the feeling of it, get experience of it, and get used to the level. And that's the way how you can take the players into the team. And then educate them on the higher level with a higher tempo, higher pressure, and then take them after they are 18 into the first team.
One thing I do want to touch on, and I think it's probably a challenge we all have, is kind of team selection. You know, what goes into your methodology around selection to you personally as coaches, but also how do you then share selection? You know, is it through a Facebook group, or is there a bit more deeper thought around telling those players that aren't selected that they won't be in the team? Is there anything to share on that one, maybe, Lisa?
Yeah, I think I would always kind of contract with the players at the start of the season to see what works best for them in terms of sending the team out. But I do think for those who don't make it, I would always call them or speak to them before anything just went out. That would be, for me, really important, because I think it's where you can lose people, you can support them to sort of bounce back. I think it's really important that they understand why I'm not in the team, so that they can do something about it the following week or whatever. But yeah, I suppose for me as a coach, I would hope that the players are quite clear, that they train like they want to play. So it's not like Saturday you have to be brilliant and then it's okay to be, you know, kind of hitting 60% or 70% on a Tuesday and a Thursday. So they probably know I would expect sort of a consistency around, you need to show me on Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday what you're going to do on a Saturday, and that there's kind of predictability around that. But I do think that sort of one-to-one and speaking to the player is so important. Because if you don't, I mean, if you have the conversation, same conversation every week for 6 weeks, then maybe there's no need. But I suppose in the wider squad, it's what do I need to do to support your performance, even if you're not in the team this week? So, yeah, I don't know if that answers, but...
No, I'm sure it does. And I think there's a couple of things here. Again, Maddie Hinch, when she was on the series a few weeks back now, and she spoke about, she actually got told why she was selected, you know, rather than all the other stuff. They were telling, the coaches were saying, you know, this is why you've been selected, which I thought was, you know, something that we probably don't do enough as coaches. And someone else shared another thought that selection to a player should probably never come as a surprise, because the communication links are always connected and open. So when selection does come out, it's not, why am I not in that team? So I think there's some really useful stuff there. Thanks, Lisa. Thomas Lav, anything to continue on from that?
I had experience with the coaching the district team, and those are younger players under 14, talented players, otherwise they wouldn't be in the district team. But still, you have to make selection of who is going to play on the D-Day, as they call it, when you play against other districts. And we did the same. So we talked to the players before, like Lisa mentioned. We talked to the players before, so when we come out into the group, they will already know that their name won't be mentioned. And we also told them why, and probably not in the first moment, because when you have a bad news conversation, then at the first moment they'll be like under, although they are maybe expecting it, still some stress. So then you leave them, and then you can say in a quiet moment, we can talk about it and explain. That's when they are more open to receive information. And I must say that that worked well. And when we were mentioning who is going to play on the D-Day, we always mentioned the players who are going to play, and not mention, and we are not saying the players who are not going to be selected. Because it's also like a positive way of bringing it, now you have earned to play these players. And I know some coaches did it the other way around. Next week, this, and this, and this will not play. This other way of bringing the news, then we said next week, you have more names to read then, but it's also that different atmosphere than in the group. And those players who won't be mentioned, they know that already before, on the forehand.
And Thomas, before we go on to your magic tricks and a little bit of a plug for the Hockey Caravan, the season is obviously beginning, hopefully, Lisa, soon for you as well. And Thomas Lab began last week. Maybe you can share some insight about what some of the stuff that you're really going to focus on this year, maybe as a playing group for the youth and the seniors you're coaching, but maybe for you as a coach, what some of the kind of learning areas you really want to focus on to get better this year?
Interesting. We started last weekend. We had our first match. It was first match in the Netherlands, first competition match in the Netherlands after 15th of March. So it has been a long time ago that you played actually a competition match. It was also with these new rules about Corona, keeping distance from the players. And so it was something new. As for the coaching points for this year, I'm coaching together with Marit, and she is a co-coach. So we are two coaches. And she has been also with this group last year, or now almost the same group, but not entirely, last few years. And I joined this year. She invited me to join, and afterwards we had to talk with the club. So we will be together. So it's for us, it is like the biggest challenge, how to have on how to be with the two of us, the coaches, on the same level, because we are we have the same ideas about the game, similar ideas, but we're not entirely the same. Otherwise it wouldn't be useful to have two coaches. So we can also complement, be complementary. Yeah, be complementary to each other. And that is what, for us, it is the thing we and to discover. And we have done this in the preparation period. And we are going to try to improve that and work on that during the season. How to be clear in bringing the messages to the team. And as for matter of some other things, my focus will be technical stuff, on technical development under 18 team. It is a technical well-developed team, but still they can do some improvement this year before going to the seniors. So this is the year where we still focus on development and not on the performance 100%. Not that we don't want to perform, but we still are aware of this fact that we should develop these technical players because they have now time for that, possibilities for that. That's one of the things. I'll be focused on the technical stuff.
And is there anything in particular, Thomas Love, technically wise? Is there anything in particular on the technical side?
Well, there is one thing we have discussed before, and the players also, like for the forwards, They came also to us and they said, yeah, we would like to execute goal scoring, what Lisa mentioned in the Netherlands, in the circle, into the D, how we can do it quicker. Yeah, and you know, yeah, shorthand grip would be a shorthand hit would be a good idea. But we know it, but we don't do it. They said, we know it, but we don't do it. So I think that will be one of the details that I will be happy to train with them. And we had the team weekend before the season, on the preseason, and the team themselves, they said, our biggest strength is playing together. Is we are to play together, defend together, attack together, support each other together. And that was interesting because the team said that, the players said that. They had the different groups, they put them in different groups so they can talk about what team we would like to be. And they came up, all of them, with this, that the team is our biggest strength. And that's also about team play and supporting each other on the match, mentally, tactically, with the options, but also mentally supporting each other. So that will be the focus points, the priority. Up,
maybe whilst Lisa shares her insights, maybe you could find the video. I know that you have the video. If it's there, maybe you can share it after Lisa shares hers.
I do.
Yeah, for me, Jack, this year, this is my first year coaching men's hockey in the top division. So for me, very quickly, I'm just trying to I suppose, analyze what's the same as what I already know and what's different. So what's different from women's hockey to men's hockey, particularly at that level. So, but for me, so probably, I've kind of been working with the team now for only 3 or 4 weeks, but very much a focus on in each line, receiving to go forward. So, you know, they're very good at eliminating and all that kind of stuff, but I just think there's loads of potential there with the team if they can just even have that as a kind of basic concept. And whatever their position is, whether that's, you know, defender, forward, midfielder, just having the mindset of trying to do that and positioning yourself to be able to do that, I think it will be a game changer for the team. So, but outside of that, it'll be lots of learning quite quickly for me this year. But there's a lot of crossover as well, much the same from what I've seen, just happens quickly.
Exciting times. Thomas Lab, are you ready with the video?
Yeah, I will try to share the screen now. Yeah. This one.
There you go. And Thomas Lavitt, I think it's probably best if you talk this over, because this is obviously going out as a podcast as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can talk it over, yeah. Can you see it, Jack? Elisa?
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, shorthanded it. Some examples of goal scoring with the shorthanded hit. Luciano Aymar, of course. Why do we use it? It saves time and space, quick and powerful, and difficult to read for the opponent. Double V grip, two-thirds of stick, and left hand shifts downwards. You can see on the video, left hand shift downwards. The grip. Body position, bend your knees, straight back, and the head towards the ball. Keep watching at the ball. The ball is probably close to your body, inside of the left foot. And that's why it saves space in scoring opportunities. Back swing short with elbows and wrists, short and quick, and the full follow through. And you can make an X with your underarms to create a greater power. If you can execute it in that way, with creating X with your underarms, it creates a greater power, because it gives an extra power, not only from your wrist, but also from your underarms, which you can generate to the ball.
Awesome, Thomas Lab. I'm sure your team of under 18 youth this year will score a lot of goals, and you'll be ecstatic on the sidelines.
I think it will be nice.
Maybe against Den Bosch next weekend could be a good
start. Next weekend will be very quick. We haven't started this part yet. That will be a good surprise. But next weekend against Den Bosch, it will be good game for sure.
Awesome. And they always say we should finish a session with a smile, like we say to the players and the coaches. And today, hopefully, we can finish with a smile and probably a bit of a laugh, because Thomas Lav, I believe you have a bit of a trick for us between the three of us to do. And maybe you can share a bit of background and context to why you're doing this.
Like I mentioned in the beginning, I've been doing the hockey magic clinics in the Netherlands, but also in the Europe. And what we have been doing for the past years, it was the EHF caravan during the summer. And then we went with the minibus, minivan. My colleague Dick and I, we went to different countries. We went to Scandinavian countries, to Central Europe countries, and then we travel from country to country and do the clinics for the youth. And this hockey magic clinics, it is difficult to explain actually what is hockey magic. It is what I have learned also from my colleague. It's like an inner game of hockey. It's not only about executing skills or doing the drills. It's the whole way how you can design a clinic or a session. But it's more about the clinic, but you can get more into it to get in a kind of a flow where you will develop or execute the skills you have never even dreamed of. And we have seen, because the biggest, I think, in as a coach, the biggest obstacle at the player, a talented player, is with himself. These expectations, for example, need to perform, and these all things that are blocking your mind and soul to perform and to enjoy the game as you would, as you have done when you were a 10-year-old kid. And if you want to get, it is difficult to get there, But with Hockey Magic, we are trying to explore what kind of things can support that. What kind of design of the clinic, design of the session. And it's not only about hockey, it's also about the whole day. It's about the group dynamics. And sometimes we have experienced that. The kids, they were doing, we play the game in the end, as usually, and they play the kid you think, oh, this kid is a good guy, good boy, good girl, but not so much talent. But then in the end, they were playing a game and they did things we haven't even trained. We didn't train this backdoor passing, but they did it because it came naturally to them. So in the way when they were liberated, all of these things that the coach was saying to them, yeah, you put you on the left defender, you know, you are just, yeah, you'll be good. And then it came out and that was amazing for me. And what we did with this things we do with this hockey magic, we incorporate juggling for the rhythm. We incorporate slackline for the focus. I don't know if you know the slackline, but it's like, but you have to stand on the slackline and it's moving, and you know, it's like on a cord you have to dance, and then maybe you can do some hockey, keeping ball high on your stick while standing on the court. But it creates such a different focus in your mind. And yeah, that's why it is so interesting to do it.
And to here we go, Toislav. The trick, you've asked us to request two balls. So let's go.
Yeah. So what we... one of the things you can do, we have two juggling balls or two tennis balls or two different balls. You need to stand up for this. Can you see? Yeah, you see me. You can see, yeah. You just have to see me, and then so first we do the warming up. The warming up, and I, if the the coaches viewers have this, they can also join us with the balls. Hockey balls or some tennis balls will be fine. So the first warming up exercise, you just put them two at the same time. All right. I'm doing well, Jack, with these hockey balls. The second one is you let the balls cross each other. Yeah? One higher, one lower. One higher, one lower. And then you can change, so you can change this one higher, this one lower, change. Very well. So now we are warmed up for this one, and now comes the last one. Watch carefully. So you throw the balls straight, but you cross your arms. So ball straight, and now cross the arms. Ball straight. Cross the arms. Ball straight. Yeah, you can start like this. You can also start like this to cross your arms. Yeah, and then straight, and then catch, and then straight. And then you can change also your
dangerous
arms.
Dangerous from
a slab. Oh. Yeah, the balls go straight. Oh. And the arms cross. So. So what it, you have experienced it, I hope, what it does to your brains, huh?
What does it do to yourself? Yeah.
Really tell cool. Me, Lisa, what was the experience, Lisa?
You have to narrow your focus very quickly. So, I really like it. Because I think especially sometimes at the start of a training session, particularly if you're doing something technical, but there's not a lot of running, sometimes players' focus can be a bit, you know, they've just arrived in and all that kind of stuff. Whereas with this, I can see how you need to narrow your focus very quickly or you're dropping balls everywhere.
Yeah. That's exactly a good one. That's exactly that. And then if you like do some exercise like this, this one comes from Life Kinetics. I mean, I didn't design this one myself, but we use Life Kinetics. Sometimes somehow fits in this philosophy we have. And exactly what you said, Lisa, it narrows your focus. And then if you now go switch to the hockey exercise, you'll see a different focus in it, because you can take this focus from this into the hockey exercise. And you can imagine that it will also work with the slack line as well. It's extremely difficult to be on the slack line and to keep the balance and then have a stick and the ball. But it's fun. It's fun to do it. It's fun to do it. And you can take, because, and you have to be really like relaxed. Relaxed but alert, they say in English, relaxed and alert. And if you take this experience from relaxed and alert into the hockey exercise, that it will be such a different dimension in the simplest exercise. That was the background.
There it is, the magic in real. Tomislav, Lisa, thanks so much for your time and your energy. Very grateful. On one of many Zoom calls, I'm sure, that take over the life at the moment. But again, thanks so much for your time and energy. And I think the players are incredibly lucky to have you, and we're excited to see where both of your teams head in the coming months and coming years.
And Jack, before we end, I just had a question for you. Because it is the last in the series, Jack. So you have done a really awesome job all these Mondays with these interviews. And yeah, can you tell us and the viewers, how was it was for you to do this, deliver this with all these guests and
kind of get to live the dream, really. You get to see someone else's face, and you can ask them all your own questions and ask other people's questions, which is, one, supports my coaching, but also hopefully supports other coaches. And I think one of the biggest things that I think all the coaches have learned, that whether you work at the top level or you're working at the grassroots level, we're coaching the same game. It's slightly different in terms of its dynamics, but the game is fundamentally the same, and we probably share a lot of the same challenges, and we're all trying to do the same thing. And I think one of the biggest things I've taken from all the world-class people is just being, everyone's been so reflective in their approach and their methodology, and reflective and understand about why they're doing what they're doing.
Okay, nice. Thank you.
Awesome. Lisa, Tomislav, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jack.
Have a good rest of your day. See you later, Tomislav.
Lisa, have a nice day.
You too, Tommy.
Thank you for listening to the European Hockey Federation podcast, presented The Coaching Lab, powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFAH Academy. Podcast of Series 2 are finished. Follow European Hockey Federation on social media to keep in touch and know about more podcasts in the future.